I speak so quietly, he says. Never in my life. I was always the one out of us kids that did the most squealing. And so I got the most whippings for it, too. And believe me, I can speak for an hour with or without a microphone. And I should have been a politician, because I think I could speak for an hour and never say a thing. It's just something in the genetics. I don't know what it is. But I've got a lot to say tonight, and it's going to be hard to speak an hour when you start mentioning the gospel of Jesus Christ, because it's a lifelong project. There's no way to confine it into an hour or 45 minutes. And I hope we've all decided in our hearts that we got the whole rest of our life to hear the gospel of Christ. I'm pleased to see so many out tonight. Those of you that came in late, later than I thought I would be the last one in, but it's good to look up from your prayer and see more pews filled up. First thing I'd like to do tonight is turn to the book of John, the 18th chapter. And yes, I do feel like the Lord has placed in my heart a message for the night, and it was as much a message for me as it was possibly for any one of you. In my Bible, the Inspired Version, I'll be reading verse 37 and 38. I'm not sure if there's any difference. I didn't look it up. The very last part of the 37th verse. Now, this is at a time when Jesus stands before his accusers. The laws of the land are dealing with this just man unjustly. And we all know that story. And that's why we're here. And Jesus is being questioned. And he replies to Pilate. He says, "Everyone that is of the truth heareth my voice." And Pilate saith unto him, "What is the truth?" That's a question now, isn't it? What is the truth? You know, Jesus could have came back with an hour sermon. He could have came back with a lifelong project for this man that asked that question. And in the few minutes I have tonight, I don't intend to answer that question. Possibly even in my attempt here, I'll just raise more questions. But if I can get you thinking about it, that's the whole purpose. I'd like to talk to you just a little bit about what is the truth. And I'm not going to talk necessarily about things that are true. There are a lot of things we could talk about that are true. I want to talk about the truth. It's a concept. It's a process. It's part of the creation of God, the truth. It's the hinge upon which all creation exists and pivots. Every breath that we breathe is related to that one word, the truth. Whether we live or whether we die is focused upon that one thing, the truth. The book of Psalms, the 25th chapter, the 10th verse, "All the paths of the Lord are mercy and truth unto such as keep his covenant and his testimonies." All the paths of the Lord are mercy and truth. So if we see something out there that is of some other nature, obviously, it's some other path. It may be a good path, a reasonable course to take in some episodes, but the paths of the Lord are mercy and truth, not vengeance or hate or discontent or confusion, just mercy and truth. It's that simple. I happened to receive a newsline put out by our union here a while back that quoted a man, an author that's famous by the name of Jack London, where in the newsletter used his work to, you might say, put a stamp of approval on some of theirs, wherein he promoted violence and prejudice and segregatism. Well, you know me being me, I had to write a letter to the union, and I await my response. But I let them know that neither Jack London nor the UAW was in a position to comment upon the works of God. That they had no right nor no privilege to speak for the Master of Men, and certainly had no authority. So we'll see what happens. But me being me, it's gotten me in a lot of trouble over the years. Now to focus on the truth. Another interesting thought with the truth is in the book of John, in the 8th chapter. Very famous statement. I'm going to read the last half of the 31st verse and the 32nd. If ye continue in my word, then are ye my disciples indeed. And ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. And that, of course, passage was made statement by a Reverend Martin Luther King many years ago. Or at least he put it in the public's eye, I would say. But you notice it says, if ye continue in my word. None of us is to become of the mind and of the nature to believe that we've achieved a fullness of the word. Because no matter what you've done, or how good you've been, or how much you've known, or how many people you've converted, there's always one more. There's always one more thing to do. One more tidbit to know. One more episode of temptation to overcome and obedience to practice. And ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. And free from what? Well, free from sin is the first answer that normally comes to mind. But even better than that, we never have to be afraid. Whatever you're afraid of, you don't have to fear anymore. Like Brother Bob Oldham, who's not here, I can talk about him. He's deathly afraid of cats. Now, he stayed at my house in Janesville one time, and we had a pretty full house, and there was only one place left for old Brother Bob. And it finished off room, right? But it was about this wide and about 7 feet long, and it was under the stairs. We made him up a little pallet on the floor, you know, so with a mattress and stuff. It would... plenty good, kind of like camping out, you know. And of course, my son took opportunity to find 4 or 5 stuffed cats and put them in there with him. I was never more proud of my boy at that moment. Oh boy, I'll tell you, that's scary too, isn't it? Now I know what my dad's went through. So Bob don't have to fear those cats. And I really hope he takes that to heart, as his wife will hopefully tell him, because I've still got that free cat, and I'd like Bob to have it. I really would. But we can be free. We don't have to, you know, in a pure Zionic condition, we don't have to fear if the chickens get in the garden and eat all the peas. You know, the Lord will provide. We don't have to fear if the car quits running, because we've got brother and sister next door. We don't have to fear if one of our kids gets sick, and we are too. Incidentally, that's why my wife and daughter isn't here tonight. The flu bug. And I'd always elicit your prayers on their behalf, especially Vanessa. She's one of the innocent victims. But our fears can be taken away. And probably the biggest fear that none of us think about in our youth, most of us, and I think the major part of humanity spends their whole life trying to run away and hide from, is the fear of death. Do you know, a lot of times in my prayers I pray and give thanks for the blessings of this life, and I also pray and give thanks for the blessings of death, because I know it's just a beginning. And I don't seek to hurry the process, but when it happens, it happens. And if I'm ready, it'll be a joyous time. Nothing to fear. Nothing to fear, just glory in it. It's all part of the process of the paths of the Lord. And it's something we'll all face. I noticed, without turning to it, in 1 Corinthians charity, in reference to charity, which we know in the Book of Mormon is a pure love of Christ, that charity rejoiceth in the truth. And here is the biggest gift, I guess, it would be fair to say, referred to in the Book of Mormon as charity, and it rejoiceth in the truth. And an interesting one that I need to turn to so I get it right is in the 2 Corinthians 13th verse, or 13th chapter. In the 8th verse. For we can do nothing against the truth, but for the truth. You know, as hard as I might want to try to fight against the truth, I can never hurt it. The truth is impenetrable. It's permanent. It's the fixed point in the whole universe. It's forever. No matter what I do, truth will remain truth. And an old man told me once, who happened to be an elder in this church, he's dead and gone now, he said, Andy, truth is a truth, no matter where you find it. And I'll say, no matter when you find it or no matter who tells it to you, it doesn't matter. Truth is the truth. And those are words of truth. And it's comforting for me to know that in my weaknesses and frailties of the flesh and my failures in life, that I'm not going to frustrate the truth. I'm not going to cause this house of cards, as some would look on it, the gospel of Christ, to crumble and fall because Andy messed up. Or Andy happened to fall and drag others along with him. The truth is much stronger than Andy. It's much stronger than all the members of the Church of Christ. The truth will always remain. I'd like to read to you just a little bit here. I don't know exactly how much, but I've got here in my hands the Apocrypha, which are some of the books which have been taken out of the King James. There was a time in here, is referred to as Darius, a king. Three of his servants, they got together and they decided, here's what we'll do. We'll all write down what we think is the greatest thing. And we'll put it under the king's pillow. When he awakes, he'll read it and see it. And whoever has, according to the king's wisdom, wrote the greatest thing will be called a cousin of the king, and he'll receive glory and honor and riches and such like in the kingdom. And so they did. Now each wrote their thought, what was the greatest thing. And the first wrote, wine is the strongest, because it sways the hearts of all people, even the king. We're talking about, obviously, taking wine in a rather hungry state, you know, maybe a little overindulgence. The second wrote, the king is the strongest. I'm sure he figured, hey, this will get me what I want. I'm putting a feather in his hat. The king is the strongest. The third one, whose name is listed here as Zorobabel, don't think it's any relation to the Zorro we see on TV, he said women are the strongest. But above all things, truth beareth away the victory. Well, now they all go through. The king wakes up and he reads the notes and he calls these men forth. He says, you tell me in your own words what you got here. And the first one, he laid it all out, how he felt wine was the strongest. And then the second one comes on the scene, and he talks all about how the king is the strongest. You know, the king says, go, you go. King says, live, you live, and such like. And the third one comes out, Zorobabel, and he starts talking about women, how they are the strongest. And I'm agreeing with the guy right up through here, because even the king came from a woman. You know, the women have a very powerful place in the world. Even the kings come out of them. And he lists out several things. And then He's got them all going his way, right? The whole crowd here is understanding, yeah, he's right. You know, this all does all of them. And then he turns it around. He said, then the king and the priest looked one upon another. So he began to speak of the truth. See, he had to bring them full circle to get their minds and their hearts warmed up, so to speak, to receive what he really wanted to bring them. He says, is he not great that maketh these things? Therefore great is the truth, and stronger than all things. All the earth calleth upon the truth, and the heaven blesseth it. All works shake and tremble at it, and with it is no unrighteous thing. Wine is wicked, the king is wicked, women are wicked. Now that was a pretty strong statement to make, looking the king in the eye. All the children of men are wicked. And he didn't mean wicked like evil. What he meant was subject to error, a willingness to serve themselves. And such are all their wicked works, and there is no truth in them. In their unrighteousness also they shall perish. As for the truth, it endureth and is always strong. It liveth and conquereth forevermore. Blessed be the God of truth. Great is truth and mighty above all things. And what happened, or what followed then, is, of course, he was called the cousin of the king. He received great honor and privileges in the kingdom. And the king asked him, what more can I do for you? And O Zerubbabel, he said, well, remember the promise you made about rebuilding the temple? Oh, yes, I do. And he got him to be honorable to that promise. And the temple of the Lord was rebuilt in a process of time. So the truth is a mighty thing. It even turns the hearts of kings. John, the third chapter. Verses 20 through 22. For everyone who doeth evil hateth the light, neither cometh to the light, lest his deeds should be reproved. But he who loveth truth cometh to the light, that his deeds may be made manifest. And he who obeyeth the truth, the works which he doeth, they are of God. Did you ever notice that when you're talking to people, how you put a little truth out there for them, something that's true, and some of them kind of lick on it and maybe taste it a little bit, some of them just ingest it whole, but others take a smell and they leave, and the conversation's over? Do you ever notice that? You're out talking about the gospel of Christ? Well, I have, and it hurts. But yet I've got a responsibility to lay that truth out there. But I'm also accountable for how I lay it out there. If I walk into a Catholic church and start throwing my arms up and say, you're all going to hell if you don't read and believe the Book of Mormon, what have I just done? I've just told them the truth, perhaps. But what have I just done? See? That's not really the truth, is it? At one time, when we lived in Centerview, we lived in a garage for 7 years. It just seemed like the thing to do at the time. But I had taken the garage doors out, putting sliding glass doors in them. Well, up in the yard pulls this car. It's got an old man and two old women in it. Then they come to the house, and they've got a bunch of books for me to read, right? I have to tell you who they are. Doesn't matter. And he lays all the books. We had the couch up against the sliding glass door, so he laid all these books out across the back of the couch. And I'm checking these things out here. And I know he's not making money on his books. I know what it costs to print a book, and they're not making money on their books. I reached over and got my case and grabbed a handful of tracks, maybe 6-8 tracks. I said, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. If you'll take these tracks for free, and give me your word, and you're an honorable man, that you'll read them, I'll buy every book you got on the back of this couch and every one you got in the car. And he looked at them tracks and saw what some of the names were on them. He just gathered, never even said goodbye. He just gathered his books up and left. Now, was he there for the truth? He was there to tell me his truth, maybe. But that's not the truth. And that hurt. That hurt to me to see somebody with their heart so hard that they wouldn't hear, that they wouldn't examine, that they wouldn't, as the Book of Mormon says, plant the seed and see if it doth grow. Someday, perhaps, I'll get to see the man again, and then we can sit down and talk about it. I sure hope so. We can read in our Bible about those that are ever learning and never able to come to a knowledge of the truth. I worked with a guy at the old Leeds plant that could recite you the Bible frontwards and backwards. You could give him a word and he could tell you which verse it came out of. You could give him a name, a number of a chapter and a verse, and he'd tell it to you, and he'd be right. Do you know that man did not know the gospel of Christ? He just knew words, facts and figures. He could quote dates, but he didn't know the Christ. He had never heard the truth. And the truth is something you don't necessarily hear in your ears, something you feel in your heart, and it comes from above. And I felt sorry for that man. And true it is, in the book of Nephi, I better turn to that, because if I quote it, I'll mess it up. It's in 1 Nephi, the 5th chapter. The 2nd verse. I could have quoted this one, but I'm going to go to some others here. The very last part of the 2nd verse. Wherefore the guilty taketh the truth to be hard, for it cutteth them to the very center. I happen to work with a fellow that's a good friend of mine. If I talk about work too much, I'm sorry, but that's a good portion of my life at this point. He's a religious person. I feign to use the word Christian because that word is one that has been used to describe all kinds of things. I know people that would call themselves Christians that don't even believe God has a son. And I find that to be rather hard to digest. But he and I will sit and talk about things sometimes, and he's of the nature to believe and understand that he's saved. The check's been wrote, and there's nobody can take that away from him. Even he can't transgress and fall away. And I find that to be just a very dangerous attitude to have. And I'm never going to be able to convince him otherwise. And it tears me apart that you can fall away. You're only going to do it once. That much is for certain. But you can fall away. And when we talk about those things, I see the veil come down and the doors close. And I see the heart harden up. And is that a Christian? That's not a Christian. You know, and I showed him the Book of Mormon and give him some tracts. And I said, now, I'm not going to try to convert you right off. I said, I got a lot of time here. I don't know if you do, but we'll work on it if you're willing. And I said, if nothing else, I may never change your mind, but you'll learn and you'll grow. How much better can it be than that? And I showed him the Book of Mormon, and it's just like I'd turn the lights off. You all have run into this, I know. What is it in people that causes them to shut stuff down when they hear something they don't agree? You know, I guess it happens to me all the time, because my wife will tell me to give the dog a bath or clean up my plate or something, and I never heard her. I never heard it. I claim innocence. And after about the third time, then I hear her, then I go do it. But I get confused when people say, yea, I believe in Christ, he's the master of men, the savior of my soul, but I don't want to hear that. I don't want to listen to that. I don't want to read that. Why? What are you afraid of? You know, if the truth has made you free, then what have you got to be afraid of? I read all that stuff. Those people come to my door, I shake their hand and say, come on in. You know, let's visit and talk about it. And one guy had come to our door here in Lee Summit, went on for 20 minutes about the temple and this and that, you know, and running that down. And some old guy named Joe Smith, and I let him go, and he'd swallowed it hook and all, you know. And then I said, well, I believe those things. And it didn't take him long to get out of there. But I know where he lives. I know where his airplane's parked anyway, so he won't get away from me. But the same right that someone has not to believe those things, I claim right to believe them. Is there anything unfair about that? I think not. I might be wrong. Those things that I hold precious, you know, near and dear to me, and I'm wrong on, I'll have to say I'm sorry for that someday. And I hope the Lord shows me right. But one thing I'm not wrong on. And in my dying breath, I'll say these same words. You have got to love the truth. Hopefully, if you love the truth, everything that you love and believe and are obedient to will have been the truth. But you can be wrong on some things. And still, you know, have made an honest misjudgment, misunderstanding, and still have loved the truth. We're talking about something a little different than this, this, and this, and the doctrine of Christ. I'm talking about the truth. You know that in the Scriptures, in the book of Moroni, there was a time when some truth was withheld. That's a hard thought. Well, I'll look it up in the front. That's closer. Because this was in Moroni, it was put in the front of the book because of its invitation. I don't know if I can get to the right one. Here we go. One page over. Behold, I would exhort you that when ye shall read these things, if it be wisdom in God that ye should read them. Now, believe it. There might be some folks that it's not wisdom in God that they should read these things. Because of the hardness of their heart, the Lord knew they would reject them anyway. And of course, the Lord wills that all people would read the Book of Mormon at some time. But I'm glad that He withheld that from me until I was ready to receive it. Because if He would have brought me the Book of Mormon when I was 16, I wouldn't have had time for it. If He'd have brought it to me when I was 18, I would have said, away with you. But He waited until I was ready for it. He had conditioned me to receive it. And so the Lord was merciful to me in withholding some of the truth. Alma 15 and 15th chapter and 15th verse would be a good one. It goes on to say the same thing, that sometimes the truth is not to go to the nations. And I can only think that possibly that's because the nations aren't worthy to receive it or ready to receive it. I find in the book of Ephesians that we're told to speak the truth in love. And that's why it's wrong to walk into someone else's house and start telling them the truth in an unchristian-like manner. My dad will tell you that there's two ways to say everything, and really there's a lot more than two ways, but he uses this as a way to understand. He said, boy, you can walk into someone's house and meet people, and you can tell the woman that her beauty makes time stand still, and she melts. Or you can tell her she's so ugly her face would stop a clock. And you said the same thing. But what have you just done? It's all over with, you know. There won't be no missionary work in this home. There's a lot of ways of saying things. You know, my wife will experiment on some foods that are a little too rich for my system. Now, I don't tell her I hate it. I don't want it ever again. And on the other side, you don't ever tell her you like something that you had in your lunch at work either, because you're destined to see it for the next year and a half. So there's a balance here in the truth. There really is. It takes wisdom. And truth is a mighty sword. You know, the scriptures talk about it as a double-edged sword. And it does cut both ways. And a lot of times you'll find people will say something, or, you know, we got an old sister in the church that most of you might remember, old Sister Betty Jenkins, Elmer Jenkins' widow. And her family life was a hard one. A lot of kids. Her mother was blind. No money. You know, this is back in hard times. And her dad was kind of a guy that... Here comes the guy. The guy that's going to take my cat home. Come on in, brother. We've just got done talking about you, but we'll start over. Now, at a time when they had nothing, the father loaded all the kids, shared a pair of shoes between them into a homemade boat, and down the river they went, and they were going to float to New Orleans and make their fortune. And this was a guy that would whittle genuine imitation artificial facsimile arrowheads out of the rock and sell them in town for the real thing. And they had this old crow, a real crow. They called him Old Bill Crow. That was their family pet. And Old Bill Crow was just full of mischief, as any crow would be. And he got into trouble because when they rebuilt the boat, the crow would steal the nails and hide them. And that was a day when you counted the nails. And the old crow got into the pitch that they were pitching the bottom of the boat with. And the time they got him peeled loose, he had lost half his feathers. And, you know, this would make a good movie on TV. But the dad said, when we leave here in the morning, that crow stays. Well, you didn't argue with Dad, so the crow stayed. And about 2 hours down the river, Betty's dad said, well, where's Old Bill? And, of course, all the kids are crying. Well, you told us he had to stay. You know, so sometimes when you say things and lay them down in concrete and stone, you got to be careful what you say, because it has a way of backfiring. And I'm sure he was very sad that they left Old Crow on the riverbank. No doubt he died. And if you ever get a chance to get next to Betty Jenkins, ask her for her little book she's wrote up about that. It's a wonderful story. Those are some of the things that I really wished I was Steven Spielberg, because that would be one to make a movie out of. And I've looked at truth, you know, since I've been in the church and before. And I've started picking out things that I felt were true. And a lot of them are still there. And some of them I've had to rethink and refigure and recalculate. But I look about in the world, and I'll tell you what I see. I see people looking at religion, looking at life, professional life, spiritual life, whatever. They look at it through a funnel. Like tunnel vision. They try to focus everything that they, every concept and every idea and belief that they have down into this little thing that they can see and discern. And then they drive around like this, right? Their whole life is looking through this funnel. And it's not easy. You know, try looking through a funnel sometime, and or a pair of binoculars backwards, and go out and run down the road. see how far you get. But the gospel of Christ wants you to turn that funnel around and stretch the horizon, so to speak, and open your mind and soften your heart. That doesn't mean you just, everything that comes along is engulfed and is, you know, you base your life on. No. But you've got to open your mind and your hearts. That's what the gospel of Christ does. And it causes you to see things like you never have before. It causes you to look in the mirror and discern what you see. And that too is a time when most people turn and go the other way. And I also put a name to it. I call it not only tunnel vision, I call it funnel wisdom. We've got, should I say, management down at General Motors that operate on that principle. Funnel wisdom. You know, it's as if wisdom rained down from the heavens and they put a funnel on their head like the Tin Man. And 90% of it just runs off. Very little of it ever enters into the confines of that great expanse between their ears. And people refuse to manage their lives correctly by turning that funnel over and receive what God has to give. So we cut ourselves short because we analyze things through our little mental faculties that we possess and a little bit of wisdom. And I myself fall far short in the wisdom department at times. Those are just some of the observations I've made on humanity. No great big deal, you know. There's been other people with greater minds than my own have thought these things. But I see that in opposition to the gospel of Christ. Because the gospel of Christ is ever growing. It's growing in geometric multiples, if you understand what I mean. That's 2, 4, 8, 16, 32, 64, 128, and then I get the calculator. But that's the way the gospel of Christ is. That's the way creation is. And when I drive home at night, I listen to one of the talk shows that I sometimes turn off, but sometimes I listen. And they talk about UFOs and things like that, you know. And he'll have guys on there, guest speakers. And one of them one night was talking about he'd found it. You know, we'll have time for a commercial break. You come back. What did you find? And then he goes on for another half an hour before he finally tells you. He claims to have found the edge of the universe. Well, I don't know where he's looking because I don't believe there is one. I believe the creation of God goes on forever. In time and space. That's the God that I find in the Scriptures and that the Spirit teaches me. You see, mankind has sought from the day one to focus God down into his perception. You see it in the portraits. Well, you get on a website and just punch up God sometimes and it'll have pictures. The one I did, I punched up Jesus. All right, it come back with a whole list of stuff. And one website was pictures. I thought, man, I'd like to see a picture of that, you know. The nearest one I've ever seen is the one my daughter painted, right? But you go on there and it's just a whole bunch of drawings and pictures from, they're not really photographs. And all the different concepts that people had of what Christ looks like. But they're all what man thinks. And it may be one of them's right, I don't know. But it's rather irrelevant. But what I'm trying to say is, man has always sought to make God in his image instead of making us in God's image. And you find religion in the world today does that same thing. I've heard noted ministry on the television tube say, look for the church of your choice. Find one that suits your needs. Reading the Kansas City Star on the religion page and it'll tell you that very same thing. Well, I don't know about you brothers and sisters, but when I started getting interested in my soul, I didn't set out with the idea of finding a church that made Andy happy. That gave Andy the liberty to do what Andy wanted to do. My whole objective was to find the one the Lord approved of. Isn't that the right way to go about it? I've got an uncle that got kicked out of a church because they wouldn't let him square dance. He said he was going to do it anyway. They said, you go right on head on, we'll guarantee your check. You signed to pay so much a month here, and we got you. Well, what can you say about that? What can you say about that? That's the way it is out there. I read just the other day where the last trip the Pope made, he incited several to take forceful action against all Protestantism in South America. Look for that down the road. Whether this Pope lives to do it or not, I don't know. But look for it to happen. I'm talking about raising the sword up now. It's coming. Obviously, we know there'll be saved two churches. Book of Commandments, 53rd verse. I'll read just or 53rd chapter. There's a couple of questions in there that are relative to the ministry, but because he's speaking to the elders. But I think it's good wisdom for all of us. Through the spirit of revelation now, this is given in May of 1831, wherefore I, the Lord, ask you this question. My ears come alive here now. The Lord's going to ask a question. Unto what were ye ordained? How many of the ministry have asked themselves that question? God, what do you want me to do? Unto what was I ordained? Do I have any special mission, or is it just a generic calling to do good and preach righteousness and such like? And the Lord answers his own question. Unto what were ye ordained? He says, to preach my gospel by the Spirit. Even the Comforter which was sent forth to teach the truth. It's that simple. The ministry, and I've fallen short on this at times. Sometimes you get up here and try to lay your own wisdom out, and it might be wise. But ultimately, you've got to rely on the Holy Spirit to teach you what to preach on and how to preach it. And take it to the hearts of the people. It's just like that friend of mine at work that could recite the Bible inside and out. He could do that forever and a day and never convert a soul. And yet I've seen ministry that preached what you might say rather mundane, generic sermons reach into the hearts of the people. And that's what I would like to do, be able to do, is reach into the hearts of the people. And open the minds and soften the hearts. If I can do that, then everything else will fill in it for itself. So there's a lot of wisdom in the 53rd chapter for the ministry. Now, as I asked the question at the beginning of this sermon, what is the truth? You know, Jesus didn't answer that question at the time he was asked it. I think he discerned that the answer wouldn't have been heard. The answer wouldn't have been relative. And of course he knew that he was to be nailed up upon the cross. And I know and I feel that he was anxious to do that. He was saddened that he had to. But he knew it was foreordained in the will of the Father that it be done. And he was willing to do it. 1 John, I think, chapter 5, verse 6. Just the last part. And it is the Spirit that beareth witness, because the Spirit is truth. And so we cannot preach the truth or know the truth without the Spirit. And the Spirit of God is that force that comes down, of course, at the time you're baptized and the hands are laid upon you. But that Spirit also is given to you when you need it, even before baptism, in some degree, to guide and direct and give you wisdom and to lead you home to the Father. And that Spirit is truth. But the verse I want to close with is in 1 Timothy, the 3rd chapter and the 16th verse. The pillar and the ground of the truth is. Now when he says the pillar and the ground of the truth is, the pillar is that which supports the roof, right? The pillar is that thing that is of strength that holds everything in its place. And the ground, of course, is the foundation. The pillar and the ground of the truth is, and without controversy, great is the mystery of godliness. That's in parentheses. And so the truth is, God was manifest in the flesh, justified in the Spirit, seen of angels, preached unto the Gentiles, believed on in the world, received up into glory. There's where the Scriptures answer their own question. What is the truth? And you come right back, and to put it in a short fashion, the truth is Jesus is the Christ. And we need no longer fear because of Him, because He gave His life for us. And so I ask people, you know, before I sit down and try to get them to read our tracts or look at the Book of Mormon or talk about the truths of the gospel, usually the first question I ask them is, what keeps you from the truth? Well, that kind of throws them for a minute because they don't have an answer. They thought they had the truth. But until you can break that shell and get into their hearts, you're just throwing words at them and giving them homework assignments that they won't remember. So I find that as I grow in life, and do little meager things that I do in the ministry, perhaps I've at least been given enough wisdom to ask the right questions and let the Spirit of truth do the work. And the end result of that hopefully will be beneficial to the kingdom. I do thank you for coming out and listening to me. And when you hear the truth, you know, I'm not talking about things that are true now. I'm talking about the truth. Give it place in your heart. And let it sink down into your heart and well up within your soul, because the fruit is delicious. And there's no need to fear anymore. So all things are in the hand of the Master of Men. God bless you.